This is Fresh Air. It happens to every woman, yet few want to discuss it. My guest, Gail Sheehy, wants to end that silence, so she's written a book about what she calls the last taboo, menopause. Sheehy is best known for her popular psychology book, Passages, which propose that there is a common set of stages in people's lives. Sheehy is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair magazine, where she's been writing in-depth psychological portraits of politicians and world leaders. Those articles led to her books, Character, America's Search for Leadership, and The Man Who Changed the World, The Lives of Mikhail Gorbachev. Sheehy calls her new book on menopause, The Silent Passage.
No one talks about it. It's amazing. The most profound and possibly even longest passage in a woman's life that every woman goes through, whether it's store clerks or movie actresses. And yet, no one talks about it, not even women talking among themselves.
Can you describe for us, and I'm quoting here from your book, the night I was hit by the first bombshell of the battle with menopause?
Well, it was the most peculiar thing, because I had just recently been remarried. I was happy as a clam. I had an adopted daughter. I had another daughter already launched well. I was delighting in being able to be free enough to run around the world as a political journalist. There I was sitting in this cozy cocoon with my new marriage and my husband snuggled up around newspapers, Sunday night, snow at the window, and suddenly this sort of static began in my brain. And I said, what was that? Couldn't figure it out. I laid down, and even while I was lying down, my heart began pounding very hard. Later, I found that this is one of the common symptoms of estrogen deprivation. And from there, it went on to crashes of fatigue. At the end of the day, I'd come home. I'd say, well, I'll just take a little nap. And then I wouldn't want to get up to make dinner or have it. And then there were kind of waves of the blues. Every once in a while, I'd find myself just crying for no reason. I'd read a page, and it would kind of wash out in front of me. That sort of, you know, at 40, you can't read the numbers in the telephone book. Well, at 50, all of a sudden, you can't remember them. And these are very very upsetting, very vague. Then I began to worry about bone loss because I remembered my own mother suffering so badly from osteoporosis that she couldn't even enjoy sitting in a chair and reading in her late 60s. So I went to a doctor and I said, gee, I'm only 48 and my cycle is still normal. Could I be in menopause? And he said, no, you're too young. Well, he was dead wrong. Most women begin to have symptoms like one or more of these in their mid-40s. And the most difficult phase of the whole menopausal passage are those first year or two that are given a name that I'd never even heard of, called perimenopause.
The symptoms that you describe seem to come at you one after the other. You describe a little grenade going off in your head. For the other women that you interviewed, how common was it to have menopause hit so hard and fast?
Well, there's nothing common about menopause. It's more idiosyncratic even than puberty. And you remember, in puberty, well, I mean, some of us were wearing undershirts when we were 13, and others of us, were embarrassed because, they looked like full-grown women. So it's similar here. But the first symptom or sign is often a change in your cycle. I mean, it either gets longer or shorter, heavier or lighter, closer together or farther apart. Now, what's common about that? Except that erratic is what is normal. And the other sign is the hot flash. And the first time you have a hot flash, it may be in a public situation, like a woman I write about who was at a very fancy dinner party. And all of a sudden, she began perspiring. It was dropping down on her nice white satin collar. Her husband was shooting her looks of panic. All she wanted to do was to get up, run into the kitchen, open the freezer door, tear off her clothes, and just stand there and get cool.
What choices did you think that you had then to at least begin to deal with some of the symptoms and side effects of what you were experiencing?
Well, I had no idea what the choices were, and my first gynecologist didn't give me any because he refused to acknowledge that I was in menopause. I was in perimenopause, as I told you. He sort of thought you have to qualify by being a year free of any cycle, which is, by that time, you're in postmenopause. So I went finally to a wonderful female gynecologist, Pat Allen, who helped me with finding the best researchers and clinicians on the cutting edge of this subject. And I found that you have to audition for the right physician. In other words, you have to ask your doctor, how many women do you have who are over 45? That tells you if they have many menopausal women in their practice. And how would you define menopause? And can you have symptoms in your mid-40s? If they tell you you're too young and you can't have symptoms, then you know you've got the wrong person. You just say thank you very much and find another person. Because you must be a supervisor of this process, and you must believe in your own signs and symptoms that they're real.
Well, how do you go about weighing some of the risks and benefits of hormone replacement therapy? Being that, yes, it's your body, of course, that's experiencing this, but you're not a medical doctor, so it's hard to get up to speed so quickly on what you think would be the best course of action.
Well, that's what I try to do in the book, is to lay out the options and to tell you how to take your own family history, what really counts. For instance, there's such a panic about breast cancer now, and we've just recently learned that the figures have been exaggerated to some degree. What matters is if your mother or your sister had breast cancer before they reached menopause. Other than that, there isn't a great deal of impact genetically on you. You need to know what's the history of heart disease in your family, because the most likely reason that you will die after the age of 50 is not breast cancer or cancer of any kind. You're 10 times more likely to die of heart disease. And what protects you mostly from heart disease? Estrogen. Then you have to find out about your bones. Did your mother or your grandmother have problems with thinning bones? Did they ever get a fracture? Did they have trouble bending or walking or sitting in their 60s? Did they get confined to home or to a wheelchair because they had problems with their bones in their 70s? It's a terrible crippler. And again, estrogen replacement therapy or hormone replacement therapy is it can maintain the bone that you have. And if you take it regularly in addition to exercise and calcium supplements, it can rebuild some of the bone that you've already lost. So those are the pluses.
I want to talk some more, but first I want to take a short break. My guest is Gail Sheehy, and she's just written a brand new book. It's called Silent Passage, and it's about menopause. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Gail Sheehy is my guest, and her book is called Silent Passage, and it's about menopause. Do you think there's a danger of medicalizing a natural life process, which menopause is? It's what happens to women as they get older. And do you think by medicalizing it, everyone runs to their doctor and feels ill and feels that something is wrong?
Well, I do think there's some danger in medicalizing it. Many women experience only a few signs of the hot flashes, the most common, and they may have very temporary other difficulties. So I spend a lot of time in the book talking about how to partner yourself through a natural menopause and some of the very useful holistic remedies. Vitamin E is helpful with hot flashes, for instance. There's a wonderful Chinese herb easily available at health food stores called Dong Quai, which suppresses hot flashes. Ginseng, Siberian ginseng, is helpful for fatigue and some of the depressive symptoms. Some women find acupuncture very helpful to control symptoms and hot flashes. And then as far as protecting your bones, the most important natural thing to do is to keep the acid level in your blood down. And that means no more carbonated sodas or red meat, because they're both very high in phosphorus content. And also try to cut down on coffee and certainly cut out smoking. And find some relaxation that you can do regularly, whether it's yoga or meditation or biofeedback, so that you keep the acid level down in your bone and it doesn't then leach those important minerals that keep your bones strong.
Well, because menopause is not a disease, do you think that researchers have been late to study the whole phenomenon of menopause and left women like yourself with very little to go on?
Well, it's not a disease, but it does set up a hormonal milieu in the body that does make you prone to difficulties and to, as I say, heart disease and osteoporosis. And that is inexcusable that those elements of a woman's health history have not been studied and explored to a fairly well. We know all kinds of things about heart disease in men and how to protect them. We don't even know how to protect women from heart disease because the symptoms of it are more subtle and different. And one of the shocking statistics is that women who do contract heart disease die more often with the first heart attack because they're not given the risk-saving techniques that men are. And does this affect a lot of people, menopause? I mean, the figures are staggering. Of the American women who are either approaching menopause in that perimenopause phase I mentioned, in it or past it, the total number is 43 million women.
Having looked at this whole issue of menopause, your own and interviewing other women that are going through menopause, what do you see as the important research that should be done?
I think the most important thing is to bring all women into the research. Practically no studies have included anything other than upper-middle-class white women because they are the people who live near the university centers that have done the small studies. The class differences in the experience of menopause are really glaring. Most lower-income women just assume it's another burden of being a woman, and they just grin and bear it. Here we go again, male doctors treating me like I don't matter a damn. And they don't know the questions to ask. They don't know how to treat themselves. And the difficulty that means that their families may go through, and the broken marriages and the disruption between children and mother is unforgivable. So that's the first step. Then the other women of color have never been included in the studies. So that I found out in researching the Silent Passage that black women are far less likely to have psychological symptoms or bone loss, but what they do suffer from much more than white women is fibroids, which often lead to unnecessary hysterectomies. Now, there are necessary hysterectomies and there are unnecessary ones, but do you know that 1/3 of American women reach menopause surgically through hysterectomy? Now, there's something wrong with that figure. And we don't even have a counting mechanism for how many women, state by state and region by region, are being told to get this very serious surgical procedure, often because they just go in and say, I'd like to have my tubes tied.
When I was asked what I was going to be talking with you about today, and I said, I'm going to be talking to Gail Sheehy about menopause, everybody made a face. Why do you think people have such a difficult time with it beyond the kind of cultural taboo? But do you think for many women it has to do with losing one's femininity, which is so tied in with the ability to have a baby, that somehow you begin to think of yourself as a different kind of person and maybe not even a woman person?
Well, you know, that's a terrible misnomer. You don't lose your femininity because you no longer can use the magic of reproduction. I mean, men don't lose their masculinity when they no longer father children. The fact of the matter is that you have as many years left, if you reach the age of 50, in your post-reproductive life as you have had in your reproductive life. And the advantages of post-reproductive life allow you to take the full measure of your masculine and feminine aspects of your nature, to become one of the wise women of the culture. You no longer have some of the problems that you have when you are fertile, such as pregnancy fears, such as blue meanie moods every month, such as the daily responsibility of getting from A to B to C when you're trying to balance many aspects and be a mother. So that you're free to take your place as part of the culture, its wisdom, to pursue your passion, whatever it is that you didn't have time for when you were a young woman, just trying to make all the balancing act work.
Is this what Margaret Mead meant when she said, when she talked about postmenopausal zest?
Yes, it did. And as a matter of fact, Margaret Mead's story is in the book. And her daughter, the anthropologist Catherine Bateson, made her records available to me. And it was quite wonderful. Margaret Mead went into 50. She got herself estrogen. She got a new wardrobe. She took on a new lover. She relearned languages of the South Pacific and went off on a field trip to explore a whole new direction and write a new book. It was one of the most exciting periods of her life.
Gail Sheehy, thank you so much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
My pleasure.
Gail Sheehy's book is called The Silent Passage. This is Fresh Air.